Hey everyone, welcome to the Smart to Death Podcast. I'm Kyle.
And I'm Anthony.
And today, guys, we have a special treat for you. We have a man that's won tag titles all over the world, from NWA to TNA, all the way to Japan with Noah and New Japan Pro Wrestling. Guys, welcome Lance Archer. Lance, how's it going?
I'm good, man. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah, we're doing okay. Right. Have you recovered from the Japan tour for World Tag League yet?
Jet lag? No. Jet lag's kicking my butt, but I've just only been home since Monday night, so.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh.
I fly out tomorrow to Vegas, so.
Oh, you're going out to Vegas?
Mm-hmm. Got a show with FSW, Future Stars Wrestling, out there.
Oh, awesome, awesome. How is it traveling, like, being a wrestler? And you've been wrestling since, like, around 2000, I believe. How is, like, right. traveling and just, like, wearing and the tearing on your body?
You know, I personally, I always say that that's what we're really getting paid for. I mean, obviously, we're getting paid for the time that we're in the ring, and we're trying to entertain the fans and do what we do at the highest level possible. But, you know, that's a very short period of time. Everything outside of the ring is truly what we're getting paid for, in my opinion. You know, the travel, which is crazy. You know, like I said, the other day, which it was Monday already in Japan, traveled all the way from Iwate, Japan to Tokyo on a bullet train, which is about 3 hours. You know, hung out in the airport for about 3 or 4 hours, then caught a flight from Tokyo to Minneapolis, and then had, you know, going through all the customs and all that fun stuff, and then waiting for another couple hours there, and then catching another final flight, you know, back to Dallas. And luckily everything was on time, because there's been many times where, you know, everything is delayed. You know, I've been stuck in Atlanta one time. It's my craziest story. I was traveling home from the Tokyo Dome show, which is coming up again here in a few weeks, and I was supposed to be home on a Thursday evening at 7 p.m. and didn't get home till Friday morning at 5 a.m. because they could not and would not fly us out of Atlanta because of bad weather. You know, it's just one of those crazy things. So, like I said, the travel, I think, is what gets most of the guys. So you see guys a lot of times online complaining to the different airlines and things like that, and it's just because, you know, the amount of travel that we do and the situations that we deal with, you know, that's what really gets us and probably bugs us and bothers us more on a physical level than just about anything else we do, you know.
No, I imagine so.
Yeah, you flew from Tokyo so we're in Waco, Texas, so I would right. imagine, I know you're from Texas, so you are probably familiar with our town, and we fly out of DFW, and
yeah.
your travel ending in DFW, I wouldn't wish that on my enemies, man.
You know, luckily, like, once I get home, it's a blessing, man. You know, I'm always happy to finally land in Dallas and get off that plane and grab my bags and get on home. So, you know, like I said, bullet trains and flights from here to there and everywhere, you know, it's a crazy trip and a crazy travel. But I wouldn't trade it for the world, man. I'm sitting here kind of complaining about it, but at the same time, I absolutely love it.
Yeah, totally. So, as a Texas native, you're from a small town, of course, as most people are. Mm-hmm. I believe you're from a small mm-hmm. town that has like 400 people in it.
And well, so if you're looking at Wikipedia and it's saying Gauz, that's the wrong city.
Oh, really? Where are you from then?
Hearn, Texas, which is a little about 5 miles from Gauz. My father actually lives in Gauz now, but I grew up in Hearn, Texas, which it's not that much bigger. There's about 5,000 people total in the city.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, Wikipedia needs to fix it then.
Yeah, I've heard of Hearn before, but, you know, just like all of us from Texas, you hear these little towns, and you know they exist, but I couldn't locate Hearn at all. Man.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you're going from Waco to College Station, you have to go through Hearn on Highway 6. So if you've ever gone down to watch the Baylor Ags game or anything like that, then you've gone through Hearn and passed by the Dixie Chicken and probably got pulled over because our cops like to pull everyone over so they can make the money for the city.
No, my God, dude, like, down that road, like in Riesel, it's insane with mm-hmm. cops.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Every single time. I think I got my first ticket somewhere around that way, going from Waco to Hearn.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I believe you.
Yeah, that is a 100% true story. I know that for sure. So how did you actually, so you're from a small town, and you're 6'8". How did you get uh-huh. into wrestling? Like,
you know, I was playing football in high school and college, and that was my first, you know, sports love. That was the one thing that I really, really wanted to do, and I was working really hard at it. But, you know, Texas has so many competitive football players. And, you know, I first started out at a college called Howard Payne University out in Brownwood, Texas. Then I transferred and ultimately graduated from, it was called Southwest Texas when I was there, but Texas State University. You know, I tried 2 years at Howard Payne, 1 year at Texas State, but, you know, it just didn't pan out. But I was working in the clubs in downtown Austin, and the guy who owned the club that I worked at, it was called the Voodoo Room, he knew a guy that had recently opened up a wrestling school. Actually, funny story, I almost went to Shawn Michaels Wrestling Academy in San Antonio, Texas, but the day that his mom, who handled the finances for the school, called me to let me know that I'd been accepted into one of the classes, I'd just gotten in a car wreck, you know, a few days before, and the claims adjuster was there to tell me how much they weren't going to give me for my car. And she was like, well, no, you can come on down to the school and start in, you know, October or whenever it was. And I was like, well, I don't really have a car right now. And she's like, oh, well, you know, if you can get a ride, just, you know, you're part of the school. And I was like, well, how much does it cost? And they were charging $3,300 at the time. And I was like, well, I can't afford that. And she's like, well, you don't have to pay it all at once. You can pay it, you know, $1,100 a month. I was like, I don't have that either. And luckily, there was a school that had opened up in Austin, Texas. Obviously, it wasn't the Shawn Michaels Wrestling Academy, but it was a much closer. And, you know, the guy that opened up the school basically offered me a chance and made it much more affordable for me, you know, something I could do with the kid who was going to school and working in, you know, the clubs in Austin and things like that. So ultimately, that's kind of where I started, was Austin, Texas, at a school called Southwest Wrestling Federation.
Oh, nice. My wife actually graduated from Howard Payne, so that's kind of interesting. So were you not a wrestling fan growing up?
Not as a kid, no. I mean, we didn't even have it on TV. I don't think I remember really seeing it on TV till Nitro was on TNT. You know, and that was my sophomore, junior year in high school when I first really started watching it. You know, and Sting was the reason I started watching it. You know, he was one of those guys that just captured my attention, you know, when I was 15, 16 years old. And, you know, just fell in love with professional wrestling as a whole, both the athleticism and the action and the acting and everything that went along with it. And the cool thing about it, you know, getting to work with him, you know, in my TNA days, and he actually, with his family, lives pretty close to where I live now. His brother's a pastor and moved this whole family here to Texas. So they've got a little church. And, you know, he and his family all moved here. So it's kind of cool. Once in a while, I'll see him and speak to him. And he's always nothing but cool. You know, a lot of times they say never meet your heroes because they'll always disappoint you. And he's never disappointed. He's just always been a very genuine human being. And he's always been willing to talk and, you know, give advice when needed and things like that. So he's one of those cool people that, you know, it was really cool to get to meet him, considering he was the reason I started watching wrestling and got into the business.
Yeah, that's always something that I love to hear. It's like when you like hear about some of these wrestlers and they're actually like really cool people, because mm-hmm. I know, like,
yeah,
it's talking to some people, like some guys can be real jerks. So it's cool to hear, like,
yeah,
these big stars,
yeah,
like Sting is like a really good guy.
Well, Yeah, he's always been that way. I mean, I give a benefit of the doubt for some of the guys in the business just for the simple fact that you never know what you're catching a person on, whether they're coming off one of those,
yeah,
insane trips from across the world and everything that they could have gone wrong, did go wrong, and then all of a sudden, mm-hmm, you see him and you're excited and you try to approach him, and then you've just approached that person at the very wrong time. We've all had those bad days. And
right.
Unfortunately, for guys and people who travel a lot, we have a lot of those bad days like that. You know, people just decide to catch us on the wrong time. So I try to give a benefit of the doubt for some people that are not in a good mood when you first meet them sometimes.
Yeah,
that's a very good point.
I
want to
ask you this, Lance, coming from, you know, growing up in Texas and you've wrestled in Japan on multiple stints, and you've tagged with Suzuki, who's one of my absolute favorite wrestlers, Minoru Suzuki. I love that guy. Nothing's
right.
like watching him beat up Young Lions. It's my favorite thing in all of wrestling. but what is it like the cultural differences? Because, you know, you're traveling there and you basically are just there on tour. We've not gotten to speak to many people that spend a lot of time in Japan. So, you know, how is that?
Right. I mean, what specifically are you asking about? I mean,
like, you know, what, like, how is it adjusting to, like, the time difference and, like, the cultural differences,
right,
and trying to, you know, kind of live there for a little bit during a tour?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, I just came off a month there. So, you really get settled in when you're there for a month or any time longer than that. The people are amazing. You know, Japan's one of those places that just, it has one of the lowest rates of crime all over the world. And I think a lot of that has to do with just how the culture exists. It's a very respectful culture. And if you go over there and not act American and you just show an ounce of respect, you'll get tenfold back. You know, and it's one of those cool places and cool cultures that a lot of people are very open and willing to help you. I've been traveling the train systems before. And, you know, everything, especially in the Tokyo area, is done in both Japanese and English. So if you take your time, you can find your way around. But it's still daunting because most of it's in Japanese. It's all in Japanese first. It's all the Japanese people around you. And so your mind gets kind of discombobulated at different times. But I've been literally standing on a train station track, you know, waiting for a train, looking up, trying to figure out which train I'm supposed to get on, and seeing people get off of their train, ask me if they can help me, point me in the right direction, wait for the next train, and then get on the train and head to wherever they're going, instead of just, you know, continuing on and leaving me standing there wondering if I'm ever going to make it to wherever I'm trying to get to in all over Japan. So the culture that way is really cool. The food to me is some of the best in the world. I mean, I post pictures once in a while about, you know, they do eat a lot of raw foods, fish and meats and things like that, which is not something that's really done in the States. And it's some of my favorite things. One of my favorite things to eat there, which I always get a lot of grief for here in the States, is it's called basashi, and it's actually raw horse meat, and it's freaking amazing. And people just go nuts when they see me posting about it, because Americans just think of horses as pets and they never think of them as food. And so I get a lot of grief for that one, but it's one of my favorite things to eat over there.
Oh my God.
I never knock any food until I try it. Like, there's no, this body is not made by being picky. That's for sure.
That's for damn sure. Oh my God. So I just want to go back to Texas for a little bit.
All right.
You like around like 2000, you started with a small Texas company called PCW, which I used to watch every Saturday. That was shit. How did it feel to, because you were pretty young at this point, how did it feel to like be on TV, even though it is just local, but you're on like a UPN channel at the time? You were kind of one of the faces. How did that feel?
Pretty good. Are you trying to say I'm old now? Is that what you're trying to say? Come on, man. I don't know if I want to continue this interview now. Yeah, it was awesome, man. You know, and that was, there's a lot of independent wrestling, and in the 2000s, independent wrestling is nothing close to what it is today. But, you know, still most independent wrestling companies, they ran a show once a month or once every couple months. And Texas is a big place. So there was always a company running somewhere in the state of Texas on a weekend. But PCW was a unique element. I haven't seen it really anywhere else at any time, especially on the level that it got to, because they ran a weekly show, a weekly live show, which they taped for TV. You know, we had storylines and stuff, and then once every two or three months, we would do a bigger show, what you might call a pay-per-view, even though it wasn't an actual pay-per-view. And everything that we did storyline wise was geared around that. You didn't find that anywhere else in professional wrestling. And you saw that on TV with WWE or WWF as it was at the time, or WCW or even ECW to whatever degree, if you were watching ECW, but you didn't see a weekly broadcast wrestling show, especially on an independent level, anywhere else in the country. And again, I haven't seen that ever again since then. There's a lot of companies that tape for TV and they'll broadcast, you know, maybe a weekly show, but they're not taping every single week. They're not filming every week. You're not going in every week. They're not there every Saturday night. And PCW was. So for a kid who kind of just started out in the business and was learning the ropes of the business, it was invaluable, not only because it was a weekly show and you're in the ring every week and you're getting to wrestle some of the best talent around Texas and the country, because a lot of people were coming into PCW, but you were also learning TV. You were learning the hard cam. You were learning how to work the floor cams. You were learning how to cut promos, you know, in front of a camera that wasn't just for a live audience. And you were coming in early and you were filming vignettes that helped set up storylines and angles and create characters and do all the stuff that you did see on TV with WCW, WWF, ECW, all the big companies that you could think of at the time. So for a kid who was learning the business, like I said, it was invaluable because it was teaching me things that I wasn't going to get anywhere else unless I did get signed on with a WCW or a WWF or something like that. And then if I'd only gone there at the time, it would have been like thrown into the fire because I'd have never done it. And whereas working with PCW, I was learning how to do it at an independent level, but at one of the very highest levels. Because at the peak of PCW, on a weekly basis, we were running 300 to 400 people, and then we would run anywhere from 700 to 1,000 for the bigger shows that we did. And that was a sold out arena. You know, they bought and renovated an old movie theater, had a gym on one side, That was another thing. We had a ring that was set up fully full time. We had four video screens that broadcast, you know, your entrance videos and live feed of the show. And like I said, we had a full gym on the other side, so you could come in and get a full training during the week or whatever you were doing. So PCW as a whole was ahead of its time. It's one of those things, like if PCW existed today in the world of independent professional wrestling that exists right now, it would be crazy, crazy cool scene, you know. But you know, it was ahead of its time. But it was awesome. Sorry if I'm talking too long.
No, that's awesome.
It's perfect because I loved PCW. Like, it was so cool to see Shadow and Action Jackson, mm-hmm. and then Mike Fox, who, like, mm-hmm. Mike Fox even had, like, a little stint on Velocity, which I had never seen mm-hmm. before, like, an independent wrestler. Mm-hmm. And he even had, like, a small storyline, which that blew my mind. It's just right. something that, just because PCW did have screen time, like, it was right. able to elevate these guys, especially for you. I'm mm-hmm. sure that you being on TV helped you get with TNA. What was it like, the whole process of TNA coming to you and signing you?
Well, and that's a whole nother thing. Like I said, even though my time on PCW TV didn't know about PCW TV. The one thing that it did help me is when I got signed on with TNA, it was, try to keep the story short. Basically, I tried to get on with TNA and things weren't working out. I did an autograph show in Dallas, Texas. And one of the cage dancer girls, her name was Lollipop, was there at the deal. And she was, you know, we were all sitting at dinner one night, the group of people that were part of this autograph show. And she was asking questions. She was like, have you ever tried with TNA? And I was like, well, I've tried. Nothing's worked out. And she was like, well, and this was back when videotape still existed. She was like, get me a videotape. And, you know, get me like an 8x10 or something like that. And I'll take it to somebody and see if that helps. And I was like, okay, cool. And she did. And, Bob Ryder at the time, who I think was a little more influential. And as far as the show and the storylines and things like that, he was the person that she gave the video and the tape to, or excuse me, the picture to. And, I got an email saying, you know, here's some, explosion dates, make a choice, you know, as far as when you can get to Nashville, Tennessee. And I chose a date, drove the 9.5 hours, worked with Don Harris, who was kind of running all the backstage stuff at the time. So we literally didn't have 5 minutes to talk because he had to make sure, you know, the old asylum was set up and ready to go and everything was in place and the tickets and the food and everything, all the craziness that is, you know, kind of that nobody pays attention to, that he's the one that made sure it was on point. Came together and we had a match and he was extremely happy with it. I went back to TNA, you know, drove the 9.5 hours there and back a few more times, had maybe a couple more explosion matches. And then I was going for what I was believing to be another explosion tryout type match. And when I got to Nashville, my name wasn't on the explosion board. It was on the actual, you know, the Wednesday night pay-per-view board, teaming with Kid Cash in this tag team tournament. So I had no idea. I think they tried to email me, but this is before everybody had it on their phones and everything as well. I'm dating myself. I am old. and, you know, and I literally showed up and my name was on the board and everybody's like, hey man, good job. Congratulations. And I'm like, what's going on? And ultimately what I found out was, Johnny Swinger, who was a part of the company at the time, was having a baby and couldn't be there for the show. So they needed a replacement for Cash, his partner. And Don Harris in the meeting said, what about the tall kid that looks like Cash, like a bigger version of Cash? Like, I don't even know if they remembered my name or not. And they were like, oh, is he coming? And they're like, yeah, he's coming. Okay, put him with him. Let's see what he does. And I had my match. And I remember I came back through the curtain after the match. And Jerry Jarrett, who was still a part of the company at the time, shook my hand and said, great job, kid. And then like 20, 30 minutes later, Bob Ryder came to me again. And he was like, hey, man, you want to work with us? And I was like, yeah, that'd be awesome. He's like, all right, here's a contract. And, you know, I was young and dumb and didn't think anything of it. I'm like, ah, here we go, signed. Here we go, let's go. you know, it was a whirlwind experience. Like I said, I got lucky because I busted my butt. And one person, like I said, Lollipop helped me. And then I went down and I worked a match. And Don Harris stood up for me and helped me. And, you know, this business is more about who you know and the people that can help you rather than necessarily what you can do. This day and age, it's one of those cool eras where everybody can see everything you do mm-hmm. almost as soon as you do it in 2019 or 2018, about to be 2019. And back then they didn't, you know, you had tapes and maybe you sent a DVD or whatever the case was, but ultimately somebody else had to go, oh yeah, that kid is good. Give him a chance. Now it's kind of like, you know, you can email Hunter directly, or he can look on your Twitter feed and see something you did was crazy cool, look you up and watch some matches, and you have no idea that Triple H is watching you or paying attention. You know, I think that that system of somebody going, hey, give this kid a chance, hey, try this person out, still exists to a degree. But now the availability for the bigger companies, that is WWE, New Japan, Ring of Honor, all the companies around the country, the PWGs and numberless independent companies that exist, the Rev Pros out in the UK and whatnot, can basically just go, hey, Lance Archer, let's look him up. Okay, cool. Oh, man, look what he does. Look at that, this and that, da-da-da-da. How can I get in contact with him? All of a sudden, I'm getting an email from somebody in England going, hey, we want you to come out. And I'm going, oh, okay, cool. And I had no idea. Whereas back in the day, you know, you kind of had to track down. You had to meet somebody within the company, and they had to go, all right, give that person a chance.
I'm so glad you touched on that, because that's one of my favorite things. Like, I just got back into wrestling probably 3-4 years ago. And then the coolest thing now, mm-hmm. from when I was a kid to now, is, like you said, you can catch anything. Like, you got Fight TV's putting out all this stuff, like Ring of Honor's pay-per-views on Fight TV, easy to access, and
PowerSlam.tv,
Powerbomb TV,
it's Twitch,
yeah, Impact Us or Twitch thing, which I think is the coolest thing in wrestling right now. Actually, is,
well, you know, I was a part of Twitch's very first wrestling show. There was a company in Austin, Texas called Wrestle Circus, and we were their first broadcast wrestling show. I think first broadcast anything that wasn't gaming. You know, and it was a really cool experience. And now, you know, a lot of people are using Twitch feeds to broadcast different wrestling shows, including, like you said, Impact.
Yeah. What is working a Wrestle Circus show like? Because those shows look nuts. Like, they look like just the coolest time. And there's huge names that they've had come through
there, too. I
feel like
it's the Texas version of PWG.
Yeah. Is that accurate?
It was, and unfortunately, it's non-existent anymore. You know, the gentleman who owned Wrestle Circus, you know, ran into a bunch of issues. Actually, they're expecting their first child. You know, he had a bunch of building. Austin is such a cool town, but such a hard town to do anything in, because everything is so cool and cliche. I don't know how else to say it. Like, the place we were running, 800 Congress, which is right downtown Austin, for an example, was charging him a certain amount, and then they jacked it up $5,000 on him because of their location. And, you know, it wasn't big enough really for a wrestling crowd, even if you were charging certain amounts to get your monies back, you know, but for bands, they can charge that and people will come and pay stupid amounts of money to watch a band, you know, even in a smaller venue. Whereas wrestling, you still have to keep the prices of tickets, even with the names that we were bringing in for Wrestle Circus, you still have to keep them kind of reasonable to some degree. Otherwise, you're not going to get a wrestling fan base.
Yeah, I definitely relate to that, paying stupid amounts of money to drive an hour and a half down to Austin to watch bands. So I get it. That's definitely a thing people do. I've done that myself a lot of times.
You do it a lot.
I do it every few months. So we've had Kid Cash on our show before. What was working with Kid Cash before? Because he told some amazing stories. I want to know from like an outsider working with him directly, how was that experience?
Right. For me, it was great. Cash and I clicked for whatever reason right away. And I think for me coming into Cash's situation, he did like the dynamic. He was the smaller guy, the Shawn Michaels. I was the Diesel of the group in that essence. And then my attitude at the time, I was very new to the place. It was a bigger company for me. It was my first chance. And I just wanted to do everything I could to advance myself. So I always listened to what he was saying and you know, the advice that he was giving and kind of went with his flow, you know, how he wanted the matches to go and things like that. So I think he enjoyed that aspect, and then he saw me as somebody he could help out in the business. Whereas, you know, some guys come in and then they're very combative and they're like, well, this is how I do things and this is what I've got to do. And then you get that immediate clash between guys. And I didn't do that. I wanted to come in and I wanted to learn and I wanted an opportunity. And I wanted to advance. And he'd been there and he'd been at ECW and things like that. So I just saw it as an opportunity to learn. And I think he saw that and he was really cool with me. There's a lot of crazy stories about Kid Cash. And I think he'd tell him himself, maybe from his perspective, but Cash can be a little volatile to say the least at different times. And so you'll get different stories from different people depending on their relationship with him. And my relationship with him was really good. So we always clicked and we always did well together. And, you know, it was kind of unfortunate that it was kind of a short run together, but it was a good first run for me, especially in the bigger picture of professional wrestling.
Yeah. I mean, y'all won the TNA Tag Team Championship, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, they were the NWA TNA Tag Team Championship. They were still NWA affiliate at the time.
He didn't make sure I made that. He made that point. Yeah, it was the NWA TNA.
He corrected us also whenever we tried that.
Now, I need to know, are you actually good at Guitar Hero?
I never played the game prior to doing the gimmick.
How was that
gimmick? Never. And I still remember. The gimmick itself was, you know, it was one of those things. I tell the story in the sense that, so literally, you know, I was just kind of spinning my wheels. They just brought Jimmy Raven. They had teamed us. We were already called the Rock and Raven section prior to the gimmick. Mm-hmm. And literally we showed up for TV one day. Excuse me. We showed up for TV one day and Disco Inferno, Glenn Gilberti, kind of runs up to him and I and Christy, I think we're all there together kind of going, man, I wonder what we're going to be doing today and if we've got anything because, you know, we've been sparingly used and whatnot. He runs up and he's like, hey, guys, did you hear? And we're like, hear what? And he's like, your new gimmick. And we were like, what are you talking about? And he's like, oh, okay, so you hadn't heard. And he starts to tell us about the whole thing. He goes, you know the game Guitar Hero? And, you know, we all just kind of went, oh, damn. we're like, yeah, we've heard of it. Why? He goes, okay, so here's the deal. You guys all think you're rock stars, but you only play Guitar Hero. And we're like, oh my God, you're trying, you know, our mentality was, oh, you're making a fool of us and you're trying to kill our careers. Not that they weren't already kind of dead anyway at the time. But at the same time, we were like, okay, can we do what we want to do? Because, you know, you want us to be these pretend rock stars, you know, you're welcome, Heath Slater and 3MB. You want us to be these pretend rock stars, but we don't look like that. You know, I had kind of a look, Jimmy had kind of a look, Christy always kind of had the rock star look anyway, but we all decided we were just going to amp it up big time. You know, and the first time, like I said, we had no idea coming to the taping. So that first few tapings, which we were put on three shows because we were taping three shows that week or whatever, we're on all three shows wrestling. We had live mic time. We had backstage segments, a bunch of stuff that we'd never had prior to that. So, like I said, once we learned that, we were like, well, they're giving us a lot of airtime. So let's try to make the best of it. And like I said, we both wore jeans. We both wore black tank tops and stuff like that and whatnot. And I think it was the Bound for Glory because that was leading up to it. I think that was right. Bound for Glory was the next one that when we showed up and Jimmy had kind of the glam rock look and I donned the Slash look with the jeans and the top hat and all that stuff. And Christy really went nuts with the makeup and whatnot and really started doing the, you know, Hello Cleveland when we were in Orlando and me asking for a bottle of whiskey and a ham sandwich and stuff like that. And even though Christy could sing really well, she was singing really bad just on purpose. And so it was one of those things, like I said, at first we were like, you're going to kill our careers. And then they kind of gave us free range and let us have some fun with it. And I think ultimately we had fun in the fans. I mean, people still to this day ask me about TNA or remember that. Oh, I remember you at TNA. You did the rock and rave gimmick. So
that's
they
awesome.
They could have done a lot. My one thing is though, TNA really dropped the ball. They could have done so much more with us as a group and all the different things. We could have been the one heel team that everybody was chasing and just slipped over on everybody and whatnot, but they never did any of that. We were just kind of the beating up tools for everybody else in the company.
Well, it sounds like that's a continuous theme with TNA
Yeah.
So just for the sake of time, I want to get into Killer Elite Squad a little bit and what you're currently doing.
Okay.
You know, I actually had the opportunity to see you guys, you and Davey Boy Smith, over at State of the Art earlier this year in Dallas, over at Gillies, I think is where you guys were at. But yeah. I want to talk about how that started. Like how did you guys, you know, kind of get that gimmick going and just kind of the background there.
Yeah, how did you and Davey Boy Smith meet?
Well, we were in WWE at the same time. You know, we wrestled a few times like on house show loops and whatnot when he was still with Tyson Kidd. I was teaming with Curt Hawkins. So we knew each other from then, but we weren't friends or buds or anything like that. We just knew each other. And then I'd been with New Japan for about a year. I started in June of 2000. Well, he'd done when he was like 18 or 19 years old, like 2005 or something like that. But then, you know, he broke his hand, but then he went to WWE and so on and so forth. So this was kind of his return to New Japan. But again, for me, I'd already been with the company about a year. He showed up in September of 2012. And I remember specifically, I went to the booker and, you know, I had some ideas because I knew the Wrestle Kingdom was coming up, you know, in the new year and whatnot. So I pitched some ideas, and the booker basically said, yeah, that's good, but we're bringing Harry Smith in and you guys are going to be a tag team. And I was like, oh, okay. you know, and I don't know, maybe Harry knew prior. I'm sure that somebody did buzz him that they were going to team in with me and put us in Suzuki-Gun and all that stuff, or I was already in Suzuki-Gun. And, you know, we just kind of took it upon ourselves again. Two guys, you know, Smith obviously had a lot more success in WWE than I did. He's obviously got the family name, you know, from being the British Bulldog's son and so on. But at the same time, I think he was still trying to prove himself in the wrestling business. And in New Japan, especially at the time, there weren't 1,000 gaijin or foreigners like there are now. Mm-hmm. So this was an opportunity. I think both of us saw it as a chance to really be seen as something special in the business. And, you know, I think we both kind of collaborated for the name of Killer Elite Squad and, you know, everything we were doing initially. Now we have much different images now, but like when we first started, we were rocking the same tights and things like that. And, you know, it was definitely a tight collaboration on trying to create the idea of what the Killer Elite Squad was, KES. And, you know, he joined in September of 2012, October of 2012, we won our first IWGP Tag Team Championships. You know, and we've had a very storied history to this point as far as being a tag team in Japan is concerned. Three-time IWGP, two-time NOAH GHC Tag Champs, two-time NWA World Tag Team Champions. So we've done pretty decent as far as tag teams are concerned.
So what's it? So you've talked about Wrestle Kingdom multiple times now, and since that's coming up, what is it like working in that arena at that show? Because I know, you know, obviously that's the big New Japan show, and the crowd always looks amazing. Like what is that experience like there?
Well, you got to consider, I mean, right now in the world of professional wrestling, I think it's the second largest show that's produced in connection to, you know, WrestleMania. And then for me specifically, it's going to always hold special memories for the simple fact that, you know, my first one was 2013, right when Smith and I had been tag team champions for the first time. And, you know, I got to ride a motorcycle into the Tokyo Dome. We defended successfully the IWGP tag team titles against Hiroki Goto and Carl Anderson, who's now with WWE. You know, so for me, it was nothing but a special moment. And we've defended the titles three different times in the Tokyo Dome. You know, two of them have been unsuccessful, unfortunately, but we did have the one successful time. But they're always really cool because it's such a big venue. It's such a big event. Like I said, it is basically the Japanese version of WrestleMania. It's only getting bigger. It's only getting more notoriety every year. So to be a part of it, you know, especially to see how it's grown. Like I said, I've been there since 2011. To see how just Wrestle Kingdom itself, along with the company, has grown bigger and bigger every year with more and more people watching and paying attention. It's just a really, really cool experience to be a part of each and every time.
Yeah, New Japan is 100% catching a lot of fire right now with Western fans, too.
Right.
It's like when I first started watching wrestling years ago, I had no idea. And now most wrestling fans I interact with love New Japan.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
New Japan's done a lot. You know, I mean, we had our two-year hiatus where we were with NOAH, and then we came back, and people were like, oh, my God, who are these guys? And we're like, we've been around in here. You just hadn't been watching because it wasn't until the last few years that, like, the New Japan World has taken off. The Access Channel TV, you know, in the States has taken off. A lot of the guys have been working for Ring of Honor at different times. You know, like I said, when I started, it was just primarily Japan. Now, like I said, the guys are all over the world, from ROH in the States to CMLL down in Mexico. Rev Pro and New Japan have a huge relationship. You know, one of their titles is being defended on the Tokyo Dome show. You know, so it's a cool experience to see how much the company is growing as a whole.
So I'm just kind of curious. You've talked about working at Wrestle Kingdom. You did have a pre-show match at WrestleMania. What was it like actually just being there? And then I'm also kind of curious how you actually got in with WWE.
Okay, I'll start with how I got in. Basically, my time at TNA had come to an end. Again, that thing I said earlier about having people speak up for you and give you a chance. I knew people at the time, you know, Kurt Angle, you know, he was a TNA. He actually wrote a small letter to Johnny Ace for me, from my understanding. Tess, prior to him passing away, actually called Johnny and was like, hey, because Johnny was in power at the time. And was like, you need to give this guy a chance, because Tess and I actually had a match in Japan. You know, so I had a lot of people step up for me. So I had somebody reach out on my behalf, because they wouldn't talk to me until my contract was null and void. I literally did my last TNA taping on a Monday, and stayed and did, went down to Florida and Tampa and did an FCW tryout and everything, like on a Wednesday or Thursday. No, went Thursday. Wednesday, my contract came null and void. Thursday, I did the tryout. And the very next week, they offered me a job. So again, another whirlwind experience. A lot of the people, like when I was told I was getting a job, was like, oh man, you have a lot of good people that stepped up for you. And you know, I think I did my part in the tryout, but the people standing up for me are what kind of really got my job. Anyway, fast forward to my one and only WrestleMania that I got to be a part of. Again, it's an experience that I, you know, not that many people have gotten to take a part of. I was very lucky, because it's one of those things, they didn't even know if they were going to do the pre-show battle royal that year. And just to be able to lace the boots up and walk down, even when people were still coming into the building, you know, it was a different time even then, because they didn't have the WWE Network. Now, you know, unfortunately, I think some guys are wrestling 2 or 3 hours before the event starts, and there's almost nobody in the building. And I got to actually work, you know, within the 20 to 30 minute range prior to the whole event starting. So almost all 72,000 people were in the building and watching us do this pre-show battle royal. So it was a really cool experience. I remember I was really good friends with Tyler Rex, and he was right behind me. And when we came out on the stage and started walking down the ramp, I kind of looked back at him and I was like, can you believe this, man? And he goes, man, this is amazing. You know, and so it was just a really cool experience. And I never got up on the corner post to pose when I was in WWE. And this was the one and only time I was like, I'm getting up here, I'm going to show off. And so I kind of did that. And I just, you know, tried to take in the whole experience of being a part of a WrestleMania. And then getting to watch, you know I went and kind of stood near where the audience was, so I could kind of get that experience, you know, and to see some of the guys that had really become friends with. I think that was the year that Sheamus wrestled Triple H, you know, so it was kind of cool to see him do that, because he was somebody that had kind of been a part of the FCW crew and all that stuff when I was there. And, you know, it was just one of those experiences that, you know, I wish I'd have had more. I wish I would have had better. You know, you never say never in this business, but, you know, it's probably going to be my one and only WrestleMania experience. But it was a cool one to be able, just like I said, to lace the boots up, to walk down the ramp, and to do what I do in front of a large number of people, you know, at WrestleMania.
Yeah, being able to, I mean, I think that's pretty awesome, you know, for guys like yourself that are able to look back and say, man, in my career, I got to work a WrestleMania. It doesn't matter where you were, like, you got to do it even on a pre-show. It sounds like it was fantastic. And working Wrestle Kingdom, yeah, like, to work the two biggest shows that exist during your career, yeah, it's just amazing.
Wrestle Kingdom for me is much more special, just for the simple fact that, like I said, the situations and getting to defend the titles and ride the motorcycles and everything that I, you know, I got to do while I was a part of Wrestle Kingdom. But like I said, being able to be a part of any WrestleMania, I think for anybody in this business, is a cool experience.
Oh my gosh. I'm just, one last question that I'm very curious about. So you're in New Japan, and then you started this whole, with Suzuki Gun, this whole invasion angle with Noah. I'm just curious, how did that actually work with the two different companies?
Well, so basically, we were on loan from New Japan.
Okay.
We were a group, you know, Suzuki Gun had been around together for a while. Like I said, now it's going on 7+ years as a group that really hasn't changed. You know, you see a lot of the other groups, from Chaos to Bullet Club and all the other stuff, and they've had influxes of people coming in and out, and they've kind of changed their MO and how they do things, and, you know, fighting amongst each other and so on and so forth. Whereas Suzuki Gun, for the whole, it stayed true to its form. And we were a group that didn't really have, you know, as far as inside stuff, concerned, we didn't really have a lot of storylines going forward. We'd already done a lot of stuff. Smith and I had already been 2-time IWGP tag champions. The Bullet Club was on the rise, all the things that were going on. So it was one of those situations where the company And the one thing New Japan has kind of always done is worked with other companies, and it helps them because it brings an influx of different talents from different companies for some of the bigger tournaments and things like that. They were working with Noah at the time. And so they decided to basically to have our whole group go and invade Noah and help the Noah out and things like that. So it was one of those deals where the companies were working together. They sent us as a group over there. It was kind of a new invigorating angle for us because, like I said, we didn't have a whole lot going on with the New Japan storylines at the time. Especially in the first year, it was a really good thing because, like I said, it helped keep us in the light of Japanese wrestling. You know, we were still in the magazines, we were still on TV in Japan. As a group, we were kept really strong. So it kept us relevant for whenever New Japan decided to bring us back. And that first year, it helped elevate Noah's business big time. You know, the houses were up, the amount of shows they were doing were up, you know, and people understood and knew the storyline. The second year of the storyline didn't really go as smooth because it's pretty much the exact same thing for another year. And I think the fan base kind of got bored with it. But then Noah, the relationship was supposed to continue, and then Noah decided, kind of under the table, nobody knew what was happening, sold their company to a different group. And then when that happened, that just kind of ended the relationship. We were already on our way out of Noah, but there was going to be a continued relationship with Noah until that happened. And fortunately, like I said, that changed everything.
That's awesome. Like, that's pretty cool to hear the workings between those two things, and to hear like the you use loan, like in like soccer, they do that. They loan out players. It's pretty cool. So what we usually like to do with all of our guys that we interview is, you know, for listeners that aren't familiar with your work that somehow have not seen a Killer Elite Squad match or a Lance Archer match, what are some matches that you would recommend for our listeners to go check out of yours, and what are like some future events we can see you at?
You know, I mean, right now with the New Japan World, if you're not on New Japan World, I highly suggest it. You know, it's only 999 yen, which I think was done on purpose, which it comes out to about $8.34 or something like that a month. You can watch all the shows that they're producing live. There's a lot of English commentary right now. You know, you can go back to archived events and things like that. As far as matches that I've been a part of, I mean, obviously, I always point to our first Wrestle Kingdom that we had with Carl Anderson and Hiroko Goto. That was in 2013. I can't remember the number of Wrestle Kingdom was there. But anyway, and then, you know, I did a lot of the G1s back in the day. You know, I had a match with AJ Styles in Osaka that I was really proud of. I didn't win, but unfortunately, but it was a really good match. And if you can look up that stuff, I think it's a really good chance. To see what I've done in the business. And like I said, that's a little dated as far as stuff. There's newer stuff, obviously, that they can look at. But, you know, New Japan World has a lot of it. I tell them to check that out. I try to stay active as much as I can on the independent scene. You know, like I said, I'll be at FSW this weekend. And then there's a couple of shows in Texas coming up on the 21st with Tacoma Pro in Sherman, Texas. And then there's a big one that we're doing. Actually, KES will be involved in. And Bryan College Station for Lions Pride Sports on December 23rd. So those are some of the places you can come and check me out in the States coming up. And then I will be a part of the Wrestle Kingdom weekend as far as Wrestle Kingdom is concerned, and the New Year's Dash was the next day.
Perfect. I was actually going to ask you if you were going to be involved in Wrestle Kingdom because I'm going to be bold and stay up and watch that thing live. So,
I don't know exactly what I'm doing. You know, they've already announced all the matches and stuff like that, but I will be there and be a part of this.
That's awesome. Do you have any, so you've done everything from NWA, TNA, WWE, now New Japan. What is left for you as goals? Do you have any goals in wrestling?
Oh, absolutely, man. You know, I mean, obviously, I'm still pushing forward in the Killer Elite Squad. I think we, as a tag team, are still we're actually, I think, as best or better than we've always been, for the simple fact that we really know ourselves. Smith has come into his own and who he is. I think I've come into my own and who I am. The team as a whole, the continuity that we have as a team is second to none with just about any tag team that exists because we've been together for so long. You know, and I think obviously if we're going to stay in New Japan, the IWGP Tag Team Championships yet again. And I'd also like to prove myself as a singles wrestler. I think there's a lot of chance now, especially New Japan, You know, you have the U.S. title, you have the Intercontinental title, you have the NEVER Championship, things like that. And I think either Harry or I could hold any of those, not to mention the IWGP Heavyweight title. But, you know, that's a long road ahead of me. And those are always my aspirations, to do the biggest and best things I can in the business. And so I'm not trying to slow down at all at any point. You know, I know I've been in the business a long time. And, you know, like we said, we've kind of dated myself, but I'm always pushing forward to do the biggest and best things I can. And whether that's New Japan or somewhere else, that's what I'm always doing, is pushing myself forward.
Hey, man, it doesn't matter how long you're in the business. If Ric Flair just got cleared to take bumps, so you know he's going to wrestle somebody soon, so it doesn't matter.
Is that Ric Flair saying he can take bumps, or is that somebody else saying he can take bumps? Because I think Rick will just tell you he can take bumps.
That's true.
They said it was a doctor, so now it's both of them. Someone agreed to the man.
Right.
He's going to himself, I'm damn sure.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. Lance, this has been amazing. Just so much fun talking to you. Please let our listeners know where they can find you on social media.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you can look me up on Twitter. It's one of the best ways, at Lance Hoyt. You know, my Instagram, which is at Lance Hoyt /Archer. My Facebook, which is Lance Hoyt. You know, all of them is under Lance Hoyt, and they're all open in public. So, you know, if you want to check it out, see what I'm doing, follow me and see where I'm going to be at next, shoot me a direct message. You know, if it's not something silly, I'll hit you back.
That's awesome.
And I have to, and you have to support here, Lance Archer, on mm-hmm. saying to go to New Japan World, because not only can you watch great matches and watch Lance Archer wrestle, you get to hear Kevin Kelly mm-hmm. and Don Callis. And that is just my favorite commentary team.
I think it's an interesting thing, especially when Don starts running from me.
Just chasing Don and Young Boys. Oh, my God. You know what? Before I send this off, I was looking through your Twitter earlier today, and I noticed something weird that I was wondering if this is real. Killer Elite Squad pajamas? Is this
yes.
a real thing?
It's a real thing. We have a sponsor out in Japan who helped us create KillerEliteSquad.com. I'm more than suggest you go check it out. It's mostly in Japanese. There is English on it, so you have to, you know, navigate your way through it if you can and want. He helped create KillerEliteSquad.com. Like I said, it's primarily stuff in and out of Japan. He does ship internationally. KES Inc. is the, or KES_Inc. is the Twitter account. And yeah, we've got everything from low top and high top shoes, scarves, every kind of t-shirt, bandanas. I have water bottles, the pajamas that have just come out, you know, all kinds of crazy cool stuff that just keeps coming. And there'll be much more cool stuff coming in the future too.
Oh my God. I gotta say, those look pretty damn comfortable.
Yeah, my wife would wear those pajamas. I'm looking at them right now. She would love them.
They might fit your wife. I think a lot of this stuff is actually made in China, so it's actually really small. So
yeah, they certainly wouldn't fit me then.
So I'm assuming they don't even fit you.
No. I don't get to wear most of the stuff that we're producing now.
Oh my gosh. Lance, once again, thank you so much for jumping on with us today. It's been an absolute pleasure. Best of luck to you for the rest of 2018, and it looks like you're going to have like a great 2019.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing what you do, man. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you guys for having me on, for sure.
All right. We'll see you later.
Thank you. Bye-bye.